Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So if you've been here for the last couple of Dhamma talks, the introductions all have been about encounters with mountain lions or being annoyed or challenged by lizards. So I was hoping to come up with a story today for something happening, but nothing happened. So I was actually attending a fire out at one of the Kuti sites. We're doing fire clearance around some of the major buildings, and we've actually been really working quite hard on that for the last 3 weeks. And so we're getting probably near the end of when we'll be able to do this. We're trying to get a lot done and working really hard. But what we do is we have to make sure, of course, just in terms of fires, the fire itself has to be put out completely. So we have one person attend to the fire, and it's kind of a nice practice. I think a lot of people really appreciate doing it, because then they stay out there in the forest and usually have about an hour just where you're completely by yourself and the fire is burning down, and you can just sit and contemplate, meditate, keeping an eye on the fire so the ashes don't blow out into the forest. And right now it's very dangerous because it's so dry everywhere else. And Kevin came out and brought me the meal, so it came out a lot earlier than I was expecting. And I was just sitting out in the sun and had my sun hat on. And Kevin offered me the meal and left, and was just kind of sitting there. And all of a sudden, a lizard came running up to me. And I thought, oh, great, okay, here comes the Dhamma talk. But it kind of circled around me and then ran off, and nothing happened. So, darn. But as I was mentioning, I think a lot of us are probably getting kind of physically tired. It's 3 weeks kind of full on, and doing really hard work with chainsaws and if you know Baigiri's land, it's all very hilly, and so trying to work on uneven ground. And I kind of noticed today that when I was cleaning up that I'm not complaining or anything, but my hands are all bruised up, and there's cuts all over my arms and bruises all over my body. Walking through the forest is when you're trying to be working, it's very easy to hit branches and things like that. But I was kind of contemplating this in terms of the little wounds and things. It's like contemplating just taking care of those. It's like I've noticed in the past, like if I wash it and take care of it that way, very simply clean out the wound and just let it be. It'll take maybe a week or so for that wound to heal. But if I you take a little bit more care of it and antibiotic cream on it or put a bandage on it and keep it, try to intentionally keep it clean, it actually may heal over completely in 2 or 3 days. It can sometimes happen really quite quickly. I think other people are different in terms of how they heal, but for myself, I noticed just having that, putting that balm on it can really accelerate the healing process. And this brings up for me I haven't talked about it for a while, but practicing with the Brahma Viharas, the loving kindness practice, how that can be to me, I experience that as a real a balm to difficulties that are happening or stresses in life. Again, it can be different for other people. Sometimes just having just real clarity of what's happening, just having a clear comprehension of of a situation that can bring a lot of relief to a situation, or just bringing mindfulness to it. It's like the situation may not really change at all externally, but just being aware of what's happening and not, say, reacting in a negative or unskillful way, that can bring a relief. With the metta practice, I've talked about this before, but I think it's personally, I think it's really good to look at it in terms of in the context of the entire Brahmaviharas. It's it is a particular meditation practice or an intention that we can have in life, and there's various schools of methods of how to develop it. We were talking about that a little bit at tea time tonight, just different attitudes of how to approach that. But there's also meditation practices for all the others, mudita, joy at other people's good fortune, is not very much talked about. And then compassion practice, karuna, we hear there's actually quite a few, you know, books written about that, or it's an attitude that's encouraged and cultivated, and we hear a lot about that. But there is actually a, you know, particular type of practice for that as well. And then equanimity or upeka. There's meditations you can do very specifically to cultivate that. And the ones that I've learned primarily have been from, say, Burma, the Mahasi Sayadaw. Probably, you know, I'm not sure if it's actually Mahasi's technique or not, but the introduction of where I learned all of these would have been from IMS, and so the teachers there were kind of steeped in the Burmese and the Burmese sort of commentaries, and so that's how I know it. And they're pretty much based off of the Visuddhimagga. If you can read the Visuddhimagga, and they give you very detailed instructions on how to work with these practices. And it is interesting because they're very similar, and they're closely related in terms of how to practice with them. But even just like with the metta practice, you know, once you've sort of developed the feeling and you start to just bringing mindfulness to that, and you're actually cultivating that feeling, they have you go through a particular set of objects for doing that. So it usually starts with, they always say it's to start with the, you know, the easiest person that you can do it with, and in the commentaries that's to yourself. You know, we should have the most sort of compassion, or it's the person that we usually hold the most dear. It's where our concerns are. Of course, in the West, we've always complicated things, and sometimes it's very difficult for us to have compassion or thoughts of kindness towards ourselves. We can be quite critical, but typically they would say that you would start with yourself, and then you go to, say, you know, easier or more difficult people from yourself. It would be first to be like a benefactor, someone who's been a teacher for you or helped you out in some way, and then it would be a dear friend, then a neutral person, and then a difficult person. But it's interesting when you do the different categories. It's of the Brahmaviharas. It's not the same. That list is changed as you do it. It's just usually the same people, but the orders are different. So like when you're doing compassion practice, the first person that you should bring that up for is someone who's really in great suffering, and someone who's who is having difficulty, you know. And then from there, it's like, you know, once you've established that feeling with that type of person, because that should be the easiest person for, you know, for compassion to arise, is someone that you really do know is in pain. And then from there, it goes again from to a little bit slightly more difficult, and then You might even then be bringing in your imagination and imagining situations like, okay, so to a dear friend, you know, like they may not be actually having suffering in that particular time, but you can bring up memories of when they have been, or know situations that they would be. So you bring up those associations and then work with the practice from there. Then with the mudita, the joy at other people's good fortune, in that one, it's interesting, you're not even part of that meditation practice in terms of, because it's just the definition of it is joy at other people's good fortunes. So like you would again start with the easiest person for here would be like a dear friend or benefactor, and then a dear friend, and then you go to the more difficult people. We were talking, say, at tea time with especially with the compassion practice and joy at other people's good fortune. Those two types of practice, they have a catalyst that actually sort of helps those practices develop. And so, with the compassion, it's suffering somebody that's in difficult times. So when you bring that to your awareness and see the situation they're in, then it's that's the catalyst for that feeling to arise. And then with the joy at other people's good fortune, of course there has to be some sense of their having some sort of good fortune happening in their life, having joy or good situations happening, getting a good job or having good relationships with people, just noticing, what they're doing in their life that's skillful and wholesome, seeing those qualities and just having, when you really pay attention to that, there is, a joy can arise. With the loving kindness practice, though, it doesn't need that catalyst. I was kind of contemplating this that, in some sense, it's like loving kindness isn't really a natural or goodwill isn't really like a natural emotion that just spontaneously arises completely on its own. I would think like compassion would be and joy would be, but so it is a type of practice that really kind of needs to be cultivated. It has to be. When you're going through the Metta Sutta, the kind of middle third of the instructions in the Metta Sutta, really talk about it as it's something that we need to bring up. It's like it actually uses the word say wishing. Yeah, I was reading a couple of years ago Bhikkhu Bodhi's. Or listening to some of his talks, and then it was really sweet. I was going to be doing a workshop on this, I saw that he had like a whole series of lectures on these, and I emailed him and said, I know this sounds pretty presumptuous of me, but I can tell you were reading from notes. Do you still have those notes? And he just immediately emailed me the whole kind of list of his notes. So I was going through these notes, and he was pointing out that in the Karaniya Metta Sutta, which we chant a lot, the verb case throughout the entire sutta keeps changing. So like in the very beginning, where it talks about these qualities of that say should be developed, it's more like it's a more of a conceptual kind of verb. It's things that they could be, they should be, cultivated to be worked on. And then when you get into this, that middle third, it's the verb changed to, it's an imperative. So it's like, this is, do this. This is the way the way the practice is done. And when I take that, I can really see it as, I think a lot of times I have even the attitude sometimes like when I come into the meditation hall, if the day has been really stressful or I'm really tired, it'd be just really nice if I could just close my eyes and everything would just be peaceful and just kind of rejuvenate from that experience. And that probably does happen at times, just not doing anything, just allowing ourselves to be here, just to be present. And that can be that can be rejuvenating. But I find that, like, when I leave a meditation, or when my sense of, you know, sort of well-being or happiness, when I feel kind of energized after a meditation in particular, you know, or after I've spent time, you know, alone in the forest or in my cabin, when I do sense that sense of well-being is at its highest, is usually when the mind has been very active, and not active in the sense of, like, you know, discursive or telling myself stories or things like that, but of actually taking up a meditation object and really working with it, finding new ways to look at it, or new ways to implement it, or, you know, trying to remember, you know, ways that it worked in the past, and just using the imagination to, you know, like, okay, if, you know, doing breath meditation in a particular way, you know, worked in a certain situation. Just, you know, paying attention to, like, well, what are the situations now? Is that a, you know, working with the breath in the same way, would that be appropriate? Would it, you know, lead to, you know, too much energy? Would it be not enough energy? So just learning to, you know, ask these questions and keeping the mind, you know, really engaged. I find that, you know, having that type of a meditation, yeah, the mind is usually much more satisfied, kind of at the end of a meditation. And so, with the you know, using the this in particular the loving kindness meditation, the instructions that I was following most recently, kind of looking at was it is sort of, you know, looking at it as just this intention of, you know, okay, I want that feeling of goodwill to be there. You know, again, at tea time we were talking about, like, you know, that you can use these the phrases, but the phrases really come in, you know, it's after the feeling itself has been cultivated. You know, we have a sense of what it means to have goodwill, and, you know, some people, you can actually experience it as an energy, like it completely, you know, encompasses, pervades your entire body, and it can be this really energizing type of feeling. And then the phrases are there to help us learn how to maintain that. It's an aid, kind of like with breath meditation, of using a mantra, like, say, Budo, of keeping the mindfulness there. And so with the phrases, it's initially just sort of learning to keep the attention, to keep that the intention of having that feeling there. And like I always notice, like when I pick up the practice to do it more intensively, it's like the mind is always finding ways to slip off, to get distracted, and using the phrases, you know, at a certain level, you know, keeps the mind focused, but it, you know, keeps it focused and also in a particular area. So it is like it's just doing loving kindness for yourself. And then what I find is, like, when I'm doing that, the mind, you know, it gets strengthened in the fact that it actually learns the ways that it does slip off. It starts learning how we get distracted, or just even attitudes that we have towards ourselves, or our belief systems that kind of interfere with our being able to have that feeling of goodwill towards ourselves. And then, but eventually what happens is, hopefully, is that we you know, overcome those, and then the concentration does get stronger, and we're able to stay with that intention to ourselves over longer periods of time. And then the way I've been practicing this is that once I can, you know, stay with that intention for myself for about 15, sometimes 20 minutes, then you start to go on to the next category of persons. So then when you go on to, say, doing a benefactor, and then what I find is when you start doing somebody else, it's like completely different associations come up with that person. There's whole other ways that the mind is judgmental, is critical, can find, you know, reasons it doesn't want to do loving kindness for that person, or Sometimes it can be, you know, sort of stingy, like, well, I just want to do it for myself, or it was easier doing it that way. But then again, as you keep practicing with it and see how the mind, you know, where it has its hang-ups and difficulties, then again you learn from those. And you know, fortunately, with the benefactor and the good friend, it's kind of easy to get through those easier. And also, too, the instructions I heard is you don't need to stay with that person quite as long. So you can do it for like 5 minutes for the benefactor and for the good friend. And then when you go to the neutral person, again everything changes. And this is indifference sort of pops up, because it is somebody that we don't know very well. It's a neutral person. It could be somebody you know well, but just, there's no strong emotions with that person. And the mind can very easily get bored, or just indifference, because it's like, well, it's a neutral person. You know, it's easy to send goodwill towards somebody that you like, or to yourself maybe, but to a neutral person it's more difficult. Then the difficult person, of course, is that's another level of complication. And you know, the mind can come up with the mind might want to do, you know, might really, really want to be able to do loving kindness for the difficult person, someone who's causing stress in our lives. And you know, the sense of compassion can come up of you know, okay, that person, I'm suffering, or that person suffering, and really wanting them to you know, you can do it from a wrong perspective, like, well, if they weren't suffering, then I wouldn't be suffering. If they can just change their behavior, then I won't be suffering. But there can be this sense of again, you learn from looking at those attitudes, looking at those the things that with the storytelling mind or distractions that come in and prevent us from actually doing the loving kindness and start getting into the, you know, the proliferations and distractions. And I was thinking of, just kind of talking about this just a little bit tonight, because I remember not too long ago, Lumpur was just mentioning to us, to the community in particular, that this summer there's quite a few of the monks are traveling, living often in different monasteries, and to a certain extent we've got kind of a shell of a community from what we've had in the past. And so it just his encouragement to us was to just to look after each other, to start learning to pay attention to where you are, what your needs are. I think a certain level, being able to learn how to, express that to people in a skillful way. Because sometimes if we feel like we're overworked, we can just, start complaining or kind of shaming other people, trying to make other people feel bad. Like, oh, I'm doing all this and no one else is helping me. And kind of getting into that kind of an attitude. So I think a lot of it can be, learning to set limits for ourselves in certain areas, realizing that we do have responsibilities and we do have duties, and if those duties have become burdensome or just not being able to be done, to learn how to express that, to feel comfortable with that, because sometimes it can be hard to express needs. And so I kind of find the loving kindness practice in particular helpful, because it in the sense of learning to look after each other and to be more open to trying to see where other people are needing help before they need to ask. Loving kindness practice does have this you're learning to see things from other people's perspective, and seeing to be even more empathetic to their needs. And in particular, too, it's like, if we are looking after each other, and if it's, even if it's not say around work issues, or how what our duties are, It's also like, you know, how we relate to each other. Watching our speech, and are we habitually, finding fault with others and being critical, or is our speech, uplifting? Is it praising people or, encouraging them in their practice and things that they're taking on? If they're giving, service to the monastery in ways outside of what's being asked of them, personally not have any interest in that at all, but just to see that, okay, well, yeah, that person's actually making an effort or trying to help out in some way, and just to learn to see these things and encourage people in that way. With Lumpur's, mentioning that the other, a while back, of just, learning to take care of each other. I noticed the last two morning reflections he's had that, his instructions have been, really quite simple. He hasn't gotten into any, really detailed, sort of expositions of some Dhamma teaching and giving that for reflections, but they've been, really kind of just really hands-on, instructions. Like, I think it was two times ago, his instruction was just, basically, kind of bring it down to just, being aware of, of what you're doing, what your situation is, just really coming back to that, this really bare awareness. And then and the last morning reflection he had was just, it was about that putting, learning how to put forth a little bit of effort into the practice, into what you're doing. Just, again with mindfulness, just really training ourselves or developing that ability to be engaged with what we're doing, not just habitually doing things. And I think one of the analogies he gave is like, we spend a lot of our day, like maybe like right now you're thinking, I just want to get back to my cabin. When's Jody Pollock going to stop talking? It's like, well, you're already off into the future. It's like we need to learn how to put effort into staying present, staying here for what's happening. I remember Ajahn V. Viradamo gave a talk here, and he started talking about card weaving right in the middle of the Dhamma talk and started explaining how to do it. And the entire reason he did it was because he knew that probably almost everybody in the room was going to not have any interest in that at all, and or not be able to follow what he was doing. And myself being an artist, I was really trying to figure out what he was saying, and I was trying to figure out what it was. So then when he stopped right in the middle and said, "Okay, where's your mind? Where are you right now?" Talking to people later, it's like, yeah, most people were like, they'd already cut him off, because it's like, okay, I have no idea what he's talking about, so I'm not even going to listen to what he's saying. And so I think that's kind of what Lumpur is talking about. Like, how can you be in a situation where you're talking to somebody, like they might have an issue, something in the monastery, and it has nothing to do, it's nothing related to what you're doing, and it just decided, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to hear this. And you just shut them out. So we can look at that as like, okay, with loving kindness, with compassion, like I may not understand at all, like where their issue is, or I have no clue of how to solve that problem, but can I listen to them? Can I, maybe they're not even looking for a solution. They just need to have someone hear them, just say, oh, that's, it's really, thank you for taking that project on. I don't really have any solutions for you. Or just, thanks for sharing that. I'm glad to know someone's taking care of that. Yeah, so just learning to, just learning how to tune into, where other people are, and, having the attitude of goodwill, of, wishing for their success. And, I think I'll leave it at that for this evening. So leave that for our contemplation. sadhu, sadhu.